Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for your patience. I think you might have heard a little bit of our conversation with Wendy Albert. Labor is a critical issue, and food provision, hospitality in general, is a large part of what South African consumers partake in. And it sounds as though we're maybe not appreciating those who bring us our food at home or in restaurants quite as much as we should. To what extent do we think delivery drivers are protected?
Thank you for having me on air. I don't think they're protected at all, and I'll explain why. But just quickly to sympathize with Wendy, in that everyone seems to be picking on the restaurant industry when, in fact, it's just about every industry in the country. So it's pretty unfair that they've been targeted. But that's not what I'm here to talk about tonight. But I'm talking about the drivers, and I actually have a lot of sympathy for the drivers. Mm. Look, everyone will tell you that they're reckless. They often don't know, the rules of the road, how to ride. In fact, the few drivers that I've come across over the last few years, most of them don't have motorbike licenses.
Correct.
Most of them aren't registered. Most of them don't have any insurance whatsoever. And the majority of them are not South Africans. Mm. And in fact, I haven't come across a South African motorbike rider. I'm not sure why. South Africans probably think it's a bit too dangerous and leave it to someone else to drive. But that's the problem.
I think it's a bad
thing. The real issue is...
Yeah, maybe.
But the real issue is, who is the employer? If there's an employer, who are the motorbike riders doing this for? Now, if you take the big companies like Checkers, Pick and Pay, I don't know, all the big retail companies, they employ an outsource company who then in turn contract with the rider. So it's got nothing to do, Checkers have nothing to do with the actual rider. They merely outsource the work to a company. The company then source the rider. And the company are telling us that, in fact, they don't employ the rider either.
If I may interrupt you on your value chain. So the company that I'm ordering in the app from is not the employer of the rider. The rider is, do they always contract a company, or do they sometimes get independent riders on their books?
They sometimes, but I've come across majority, I'd say 99%, are coming through a service provider.
Okay.
Who will then source not only the motorbike but the rider. There are a few smaller companies. Mm. I mean, maybe if you're ordering from an independent pizza joint, they might have a few
driver.
People that they have their own driver. And that becomes a little bit more murky for them. Mm. But it's very convenient for the large store, the big stores, to say, we'll go to someone else, we'll outsource, we need 600 motorbikes. We don't want anything to do with who rides it and how it's delivered. All we want to know is that it'll get there intact and within their 60 minutes or whatever they want it done.
And I think...
And the problem then becomes, who's actually the employer?
Sure. Okay.
Bottom line.
So I think, for example, I think Pick and Pay ASAP absorbed a company called Womdrop, who became Bottles. And then, if I recall that correctly, this is just me watching my apps on my phone. Not necessarily, forensic evidence. But what I'm trying to get a sense of is to what extent does it matter? I mean, whoever it is, even if it's the independent company that contracts them, what do the contracts say with respect to protection of life, licensing, testing that you actually are proficient in riding a bike, background checks? I mean, if I think about other platform providers such as, let's use Uber on the e-hailing side, the protection that they say they give riders, as in the customer as well as the driver, is background checks. You got to check your license. We check your car on an annual basis. Is that not happening in the delivery space?
Absolutely not. Not from my end. It's anecdotal because I speak to many of these delivery riders. And they don't have any protection whatsoever. In fact, most of them don't have licenses at all, never mind motorbike licenses. They don't have licenses at all. Most of them are then having to sign a contract saying that they're not employed by the service provider. They are independent contractors who charge the company X amount per night. And then they add to their charges. If you've done X amount of deliveries, you add to it. And each one differs. There's different contracts. But none of them say we actually employ 600 riders or 100 riders or whatever. So they are completely independent contractors. They promise the company that they are able to ride the motorbike. And in fact, many of them actually take out a debt to buy the motorbike, which then is looked after by the company. And to a large degree, many of these motorbikes are not roadworthy either. So you've got a complete, it's a mess at the moment. The government does need to set in some sort of rules and regulations as to how they're going to handle this. Otherwise, it's already got out completely out of control. And if someone has an accident, well, that's his problem. He's not covered by workman's compensation. He's not covered by UIF. He's got no one deducting anything anywhere. And then, of course, some of these people are earning quite good money and there's no income tax either.
Well, I was about to say exactly this. Sorry, Michael, if you'll excuse me here. I understand our Gini coefficient. I understand the imbalances in our society. But what you're effectively describing to me is an independent, self-employed contractor who chooses to enter an industry they are not qualified for, not necessarily have to pay the taxes or the payee that they would if they were employed, and which is a benefit for them. And at the same time, therefore, needs to cover their own medical expenses. There are freelance workers around the country doing this in the arts, in media. It's just that they don't put themselves in a dangerous spot. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I'm trying to play devil's advocate here.
The real problem you've got is that people are desperate. They don't have work permits. They're not locals. They can't find any other job. And this is a nice entry into the employment market, although you're not actually employed. You're working for yourself. Our law, however, should step in and should be monitored very carefully by the Department of Employment and Labor. Sure. And in fact, this is a bigger problem because if one of these motorbikes ride into your car, who are you going to sue?
Claim from.
Who are you going to turn? Where are you going to claim? You then have to get hold of your own insurance company. You've got to pay the no claims bonus. You will pay the first 10,000-15,000 rand. Mm. And invariably, if a motorbike hits you, that's all it is. So you'd rather just pay it yourself. So hundreds of my clients are telling me that they got into an accident with a motorbike like this, and there's no one to sue. The person's impecunious. He's actually lying in hospital. He's got a broken leg. He's in a public hospital. He can't afford anything else. He can't earn for the next 6 months, so you just pay. You pay for your damaged car. You pay for the insurance, no claim bonus. It's just the whole thing becomes a mess.
Michael,
and it's not monitored at all.
I appreciate the issue of the desperation in the country, but I'm also very appreciative of rule of law. I'm so sorry, but if a law needs to be put in place or some kind of intervention needs to come from government, if nothing else, it should just be to disincentivize law breaking. So it should be to disincentivize, let's say, outsourcing of the riders, maybe disincentivize this casual nature of it. But to be honest, I struggle with the idea of coddling, and I know that sounds harsh because trust me, I'm Che Guevara in the heart, but I struggle with the idea of coddling a person who is saying, I refuse to get the license. I'm going to buy a license and I'm going to ride on a two-wheeler at high speeds. I know you speak to a lot of the drivers, and so do I, by the way, because I rely on that part of the industry a great deal. But I also speak to a lot of e-hailing drivers who are not owners of the car that they're driving, who are put in a difficult situation because this person turns funny, weaves between their cars, end up in a car accident, can't drive for 4 days, lose their income. And then the owner of the car that they're e-hailing with is like, well, it happened on your watch. There's a knock-on effect to everybody in the economy if we turn a blind eye to some bad behavior at the beginning of this.
Yeah, absolutely right. But with the e-hailing, the government has stepped in and they're desperately trying to somehow monitor it and get some sort of rules and regulations. So they are starting. It's not finalized, it's not perfect, but they're getting there. What's complete blind eye to the motorbike riders, and we're getting more and more of them. And understandably, because yes, I also rely on people bringing a pizza to my home, and I get the motorbike rider, and you want to talk to the motorbike rider, you want to give him 20 rand as a tip, and he relies on that because he's actually earning very little. But our law, our labor law, actually has answers, but you need someone to monitor it. And the labor law specifically says if someone is working under the banner, and I'm sorry I'm picking on Checkers, and I apologize to
guys.
Them. Okay, but I apologize to them. But let's say they are working by delivering. They've got their box says Checkers. It says everything else. We'll get there within 60 minutes. And they do. They get there within 60 minutes. Absolutely efficient. You get your right food. It's nice and cheap. And everything's happy. You give the man 20 Rand. But at the end of the day, the labor law says he's earning under the threshold. We're going to define him. We're going to deem him to be an employee of Checkers. And I think if someone steps in and does that, and is willing to take that risk, but a lot of them won't do it because then they'll never be able to work again, because it's once you cause trouble, you'll never get the contract again. And so these riders will never do anything. I've spoken to a few and I said, but you know, I think you're actually employed by X, Y, and Z. And they say, yeah, but we don't want to rock the boat because otherwise we don't have the work. We don't get it. And there are thousands of others waiting to get into the queue right behind us. So as soon as we've lost out, we've gone. That's the end of it.
Yes, and, Michael. That's the home affairs problem. Is everybody is like incentivized to cross the border because Michael's going to get on Kai FM and say, no, we got to look out for you.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, our border is porous.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we do very little about that. That's the source of the problem in the first place.
Yeah.
And of course, you can't rely on the Department of Employment and Labor. They only got 2,000 inspectors for the entire country.
And they're apparently all the restaurants.
Yeah.
Michael, I've got to let you go, though.
Thank you.
But
no
so
problem.
Appreciate your perspective. Michael Bergram, labor law expert at Bergram Attorneys, giving us some perspective on the protection of the rights of the guys that come and bring us all these services on bikes. Before that, Wendy Albert's also presenting the rights of those who serve us at our eateries.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.